Please listen carefully.
Welcome in, everyone. You're listening to the Heard It Here Sports Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Cooper Heard. It's a pleasure to be talking hoops with y'all this Friday afternoon. And today, I want to talk a little bit about the G League Ignite program, specifically prompted by some of the comments that Adam Silver made a couple of weeks ago, which were pretty alarming to a lot of folks in the NBA draft community. Those of us that have been following the G League Ignite program since it was created in the 2020 season, the first year actually being the COVID season, which I think we could talk about a little bit further down the line, but certainly was an issue right from the get-go, right? Silver in his statement mentioned that the Ignite was created to fill a need in the market. I think there was a very strong implication that that need is less existent now. There are obviously more competitors in the market with the NBL Next Stars program, Overtime Elite program, some programs in Europe, such as Ratio Farm in Germany, are starting to become a little bit more focused. Mega over in Serbia is another one that is focused on maybe bringing in a prospect or two and maybe focusing on development. And NIL money at the NCAA level have all served as alternatives for players that have finished their high school degree, need to wait a year to become eligible for the NBA draft, but don't want to do a year of college, right? The impetus of this whole discussion is, okay, well, guys want to go get paid for a year, right? That's generally what you think of. With NIL, it's not as much of a concern, which I think that's reasonable for Silva to point out, right? He also mentioned a lot about the European-style development, the emphasis on practice over playing games, and the idea that a lot of our player population at this point in the NBA is folks that are international born and based, folks that played in European leagues growing up. I do think that is something that is the percentage of players that are international born these days is substantially higher even than it was 10 years ago, let alone 50 years ago. So it did seem like Adam Silver kind of implied that maybe the path the NBA wants to take is not worrying as much about an alternative to college prospects, right? This G League Ignite program is an alternative for college prospects. Maybe focus more on a younger crop, so high school, even middle school kids. The idea of maybe introducing NBA academies into the United States is something that seemed like a strong implication in his statement. So the NBA has academies. They have one in Africa, I believe, based in Senegal, that has produced some talent. Thierry Darlan with the Ignite program this year, as well as Kaman Malouk, who will be a likely top five pick in 2025. Both have played in the NBA Africa Academy. The NBA Australia Academy has produced guys like Josh Giddey and Dyson Daniels. It's a program that has been relatively successful for the NBA, and has certainly helped with their international presence. That's fine. Are we going to bring so the NBA is planning to bring these youth leagues to the United States is kind of what it sounds like in Silver's statement. That's fine. I'm going to be completely honest. It doesn't seem like a solution to me. It seems like a bit of it seems like a new revenue stream for the NBA. That's really what it is, right? I think the cynical way to phrase it would be it's a bit of a money grab, that they're just trying to find ways to get money out of kids at an earlier age. It's not unreasonable, right? The idea that NBA academies would be a helpful thing and productive, but is there really going to be that much better than like Montverde Academy? Like, we kind of have NBA academies already, but anyways, that was Silver's statement. And what I wanted to focus on personally, again, I'm a big fan of the whole NBA draft, NBA draft prospects, the whole path that you as a young basketball player have to take from the amateur state, the school-based games into the professional level. I find that an incredibly interesting translation. I've always been a big fan of college basketball and the NBA, so sort of seeing a guy go from college into the NBA, become successful, become an adult, become rich and famous, which, you know, I'm more worried about the rich part and the fact that you can now provide for your family, your friends and family, generations to come, right? That's incredibly important. What exactly is the Ignite's role in developing players? What was the need that the Ignite was initially meant to fill, right? Adam Silver said, again, that the Ignite was created to fill a need. The first thing I think we need to do is exactly describe what that need was. And if we're going to determine whether Ignite was doing a good job of it, we have to set the standard, right? So a few examples of guys that skipped college in the pre-Ignite environment. And when I say skipped college, again, I mean graduated from high school, needed to have a year out of high school to have eligibility for the draft, did not want to do a year of NCAA play, instead joined a professional league. So the earliest example, at least that I'm aware of, under the one-and-done rule, is Brandon Jennings. Brandon Jennings, back in 2008, was the number one overall recruit that year as a point guard. Initially committed to Arizona, but ended up deciding to play overseas in Italy for a year. Played in Italy's top league, a program called L'Automatica Roma. He actually played in 43 games that year between, I believe it was the Euro Cup, and Italy's top league. So got a good amount of experience. 20 minutes a game. Interesting to see, especially, you know, when we look at the Ignite, when guys are playing 30-something minutes. You know, Brandon Jennings was playing a role for this team. He was a guard off the bench. 6.5 points a game, 2 assists, 1.3 turnovers, 1.6 steals at his 20 minutes. I think that was probably a great indicator of his athleticism. Something I found fascinating, though, shot 38% from the field that year over in Italy, 23% from three. So incredibly inefficient as a scorer, but he still ended up being drafted number 10 overall that year after his 1 year over in Italy. Bucks drafted him, had a solid career, not necessarily the most noteworthy player in the world, but that was the first example that I found of someone going to an alternative pro route. The other couple that I had, Emmanuel Mudiay was a player in 2014 who was the number 2 overall recruit. Initially was committed to play with SMU. And decided to actually go sign overseas in China's top league, which is fascinating. Signed with the Guangdong Southern Tigers. The competition, especially, I think, a decade ago in the Chinese league, I think it's a little more competitive these days. I'd be interested to hear how it stacks up, how folks would evaluate it as stacking up. But he was able to be a starter on that team. He played 30 minutes a game, only played 10 games due to injury, but was, again, 17.5 points a game, 6 assists to 3 turnovers. Again, he had the ball a lot. He shot 50% from the field, actually, so he had a much more efficient game. But that's an interesting example of, again, rather than going and playing a smaller role for a competitive, you know, in a highly competitive league, he went and played a bigger role in a less competitive league. He was, again, the number 2 overall recruit, ended up being drafted number 7 overall to the Nuggets after his 1 year in China. So, you know, only played the 10 games, but didn't really hurt him very much. Not necessarily someone with a particularly notable career either. The third candidate that I had come up with was Terrence Ferguson, who went to Australia. I know you'll say, you know, he signed with the NBL. That's not really different, but this was before the Next Stars program. This was back in 2016. Initially, Ferguson was committed to Arizona, decided he wanted to play a year professionally, and signed with the Adelaide 36ers. Like Brandon Jennings, Terrence Ferguson was a role player on that team. He played 15 minutes a game for them over the course of 27 games. A little under 5 points a game, less than a half a steal, half a block, but again, he was playing 15 minutes a game and just is sort of a shooter role. The most impactful thing he was doing was he was shooting 32% from three on 2.2 attempts a game, which, again, in 15 minutes for a forward is not bad. He was a 12th overall recruit that year, ended up being drafted 21st overall by OKC. Those are all that were following the team then. I guess, and I don't remember this, but it must have been 2017, so the year right after KD left. Ferguson was sort of more of a small forward, a little bit bigger, but I think he kind of at least scratched the same itch that a guy like Thabo Sefolosha or Andre Roberson had in the past of, you know, ideally your long, lanky wing that can be your primary stopper, but not necessarily a dependable shooter. Terrence Ferguson ended up not being really good at the other stuff either and did not have a very long, prosperous career. He actually may have had the least successful career out of those three, despite playing for some playoff teams with the Thunder. Those are the three guys that I noted that went overseas professionally. A few other examples that I found interesting, again, of what players were doing in this pre-G League Ignite circumstance. Guys that didn't end up having a full college year, right? What were some alternatives to that route? One alternative, again, going pro overseas. Another is to take a prep year. There are a few kids over the years that have just taken a prep year for one reason or another. Anthony Simons and Mitchell Robinson are two guys that Mitchell Robinson was the 8th recruit in 2017. Anfernee Simons was the 7th recruit in 2018. Both Anfernee Simons, I believe, was set to do a prep year the whole year with IMG Academy. Mitchell Robinson initially committed to Western Kentucky and then decided to just train for the draft. But both fell quite, they had real falls from their recruiting rank. Anfernee Simons was the 24th pick in 2018, and Mitchell Robinson dropped to the second round. He was the 36th pick, which is very interesting because both of them have been, you know, certainly surpassed those expectations in the league. Another prep year kid that you might not think of, Thon Maker, back in 2016, entered the draft after a fifth year in high school. I'm not exactly sure what his situation was, but he was eligible without having gone to college. Again, I think he just had an extra year after he graduated doing a quote-unquote prep year, but I think he was just playing in some Canadian high school. I don't think he was playing with IMG like Anfernee Simons was. He was the 37th recruit in 2016. Ended up going from that recruiting class into the 2016 draft instead. It was the 10th overall pick, which was a massive surprise at the time. I mean, I remember how stunned people were. Thon Maker looked like a pretty exciting prospect those first couple of years in the league. He had some exciting blocks and some exciting, he's kind of skilled and can kind of shoot. Never really worked out, though. He was just a very inconsistent player, and after a couple of years, sort of flamed out. I think went to the Pelicans for a few months and never really ended up making much of an impact beyond that. The last prep year kid I had flagged, Darius Bazley. Back in 2018, he was actually the first high-level prospect to announce he was going to spend a year in the G League instead of going to college. This was, again, in 2018. I believe he was part of there was sort of a soft rollout before the G League Ignite of like this like select prospects or something where you would get paid $125,000 to join a G League team. It was sort of the precursor to the Ignite program. Bazley was set to join He was set to join the G League with a random team and ended up opting out of that and did an internship year with New Balance. I can't say I researched it that much, but I remember at the time it being very sort of, I'm doing air quotes when I say the word internship. I would be curious the type of work that he was doing, the value that he provided for New Balance. It seems more like he just kind of got paid to train, and New Balance almost kind of signed him as a prospect, more or less, signed him as an agency, and they were kind of like, okay, well, you go get famous, and we'll make your shoes, right? I think that was more or less the idea. So didn't really work out for either side. Darius Bazley he was a 17th recruit and got drafted 23rd overall by OKC, so he made his money for sure, at least off his first deal, but I don't think New Balance got much out of the shoe deal. Darius Bazley has not done much in the NBA. I know he's played in the G League the last couple of years, and I think has signed a 10-day or maybe got on an NBA roster recently. Certainly, again, more like Thon Maker, though, as not someone that's stuck in the league by any means. And then I guess beyond that, the last group of kids I wanted to look at before the G League Ignite came around, this is an interesting example because this is not intentional, at least other than these are unintentional circumstances of guys that just missed the year. So Michael Porter Jr., right? Michael Porter Jr. was the number one overall prospect by one or two of the sites. He was number two overall behind Marvin Bagley once he reclassified in 2017. But he was he was like a 30-point-per-game scorer as like a 6'10 wing in high school. Like he was considered borderline generational as a prospect. I would go as far as to say that. Played 2 minutes for Missouri in the regular season in their first game, and they needed back surgery. It was awful. It was terrible. He ended up coming back and playing in their conference tournament game in the SEC against Georgia. Went 5-17 in 23 minutes on a loss. And then played in their NCAA tournament game where he went 4-12 in 28 minutes on a loss to Florida State. It was rough for Michael Porter Jr. I think, people had wondered if he was going to come back at all. People definitely were a little suspicious of whether he was truly injured. This was a year or two after Ben Simmons as well. I think 2 years after Ben Simmons at LSU, who I think people thought had given up on the team, and people I think were implying similar things about MPJ. So him coming back to play for the games was kind of like, okay, well, at least he's toughing it out, but he also looked awful and shot bad. So he ended up getting drafted number 14 overall. I think, again, a lot of that was mostly due to the back is a sensitive subject. That's a tough place to be injured. I think it was a lot due to injury concerns, really more than performance concerns. But Michael Porter Jr. ended up being drafted 14th overall to Denver and being a critical role player on their championship team. I think he's a major part of why they won a title and why they have a good chance to win multiple more in the future. So his fall was certainly not great for him, but sure did a lot for the Nuggets. 2018, Darius Garland. We actually had two guys in 2018, but Darius Garland is the first one. Number 15th overall recruit per RSCI. He ended up getting drafted number 5 overall that year to Cleveland after he played 5 games and then tore his meniscus, which seems pretty ridiculous. I think, number one, that was an indication of how poorly the top prospects played that year outside of a guy like Zion, even a guy like R.J. Barrett disappointed, right? You know, that was the Zion, R.J., Cam Reddish class. Nasir Little, I think, was another top 5 guy. Romeo Langford, right? These were guys that disappointed. And Darius Garland, he only played 5 games. He played against Winthrop. He played at USC, which is a high-level competition. And then Alcorn State, Liberty, and he got injured in the game against Kent State. So was not necessarily playing against high-level competition, but had 24 points against Winthrop, 33 against Liberty, and put up 19 against USC, their only real competition. They won all 4 games. And the Cavaliers, it was considered pretty universal that he was going to be a top 10 pick, that he was probably going to be a top 7 pick. The fact that he went 5 overall was not surprising to folks at the time. Just pretty surprising that he went from the number 15th recruit and got tore his meniscus, right? It's not even like folks considered the injury. They didn't even consider the injury in drafting him. He didn't get dinged for that. I think looked around, looked at his high school tape, looked at his AAU tape, and said, we believe in him. And hey, the Cavs were right. Good call by them. The other guy in 2018 was Bol Bol. Bol Bol did play, I believe he played 9 full games. He was the 6th overall recruit this year, though. Had a couple of games versus good competition, so a loss versus Iowa, win versus Syracuse, and a loss at Houston. So he played in a few real high-level games. He had actually 11 blocks in those 3 games. So, you know, that was a big thing with him that year was he had long arms. He was a big boy. He could certainly block some shots when he was playing that drop coverage. But he also, in those 3 games, had 9 assists. In all 9 of his games, he had 9 total assists to 18 turnovers, which is not particularly ideal. He was like a 7'2 guy with like a 7'7 wingspan that was shooting threes and dribbling the ball and blocking the heck out of everything in the paint. Like, he was super exciting, and people, I assumed he was going to be a lottery pick going to the draft. But there were doubts already. People were already talking about, you know, he was inconsistent. Like, everyone knew he was inconsistent. People did question his work ethic, and then there were injury concerns. And he ends up falling all the way to the 2nd round, the middle of the 2nd round. He's the 44th pick. Really, I would say the closest facsimile I would point to was maybe G.G. Jackson from this last year's draft. I don't think anyone expected G.G. to be a top 5 pick. I think, you know, optimistically, someone like me was saying, you know, the 9th pick. Realistically, G.G. should have gone somewhere between 12 and 25, right, based on what he did in college and what he'd done in high school and his pedigree and everything. He went 45 to the Grizzlies. Sometimes guys just drop. B.J. Boston, right, 57th. You're telling me he couldn't have gone 40th? You know, it just happens sometimes, right? So Bol Bol falls 44th. Denver is not really, obviously, we've seen the inconsistency bear out in the NBA. He's had some flashes, had some exciting time in Orlando. I have not necessarily seen his games recently. He's been playing with Phoenix. I've mostly just been watching college basketball and the occasional NBA game that I can watch. But it seems that he's played some real minutes for them and put up some points, which that's not really what you're worried about him doing. Bol can put up some points. He can block some shots. It's a matter of, you know, can you put him in there for 30 minutes and him be consistent and do what you want him to do? But anyways, an example of a guy that took a year off, fell precipitously, right? Another example, though, I've got 2 more missed year kids examples, right? James Wiseman in the 2020 class. He was the number 1 recruit that year. Ended up being the 2019 recruiting class, number 1 recruit in that recruiting class, number 2 pick overall in the 2020 draft at Golden State, right? James Wiseman was an interesting case because he was able to play his first 3 games and then was suspended. He was not, he was, or his eligibility was rescinded. I don't know exactly what the terminology was. He wasn't allowed to play per the NCAA because of some dumb drama where, again, I didn't research this because it just, I remember how dumb it was, and I don't even feel the need to give the NCAA any, we don't need details on this. It was what it is, right? There was like worried that Penny Hardaway, I believe, was James Wiseman's high school coach, and the NCAA was like, oh, you probably tampered or like violated recruiting stuff because you were his high school coach. It's like, it's just seems like a weird understanding of how human beings work and communicate with each other. But, you know, very silly. That's kind of just what NCAA does. Wiseman ended up getting reinstated like halfway through the year, I believe, and ended up opting to sit out for the draft. I don't know if there were any injury things. As far as I was aware, it was maybe there was some like we're going to rehab, but I think it was mostly just we're going to sit out and work for the draft, work towards the draft. The three games that Wiseman did have were versus SC State, UIC, I don't even know what UIC stands for, to be completely honest, and Oregon. So he did have one game against a big school. And the Oregon game had folks pretty excited. He, again, his biggest thing is that he's big and moves well. But he had 22 minutes, 14 points, right? 5-7 from the field. Missed his 1 3-point attempt, but it was exciting to see him take him. 4 offensive rebounds, 8 defensive rebounds. Had a block, 2 turnovers, 3 fouls as well. Don't tell anyone I said that. But again, this was a game that had people really excited, and then he just vanished for the rest of the year. You know what that gets you sometimes? That gets you the number 2 overall pick to Golden State, who we think of as one of the most intelligent. I mean, that's Bob Myers at his height, right? That's Steve Kerr at their height. 2020, they're coming off of, their height is a questionable thing to say. They were pretty smart dudes, and I would say that James Wiseman has not panned out so far. He's looked a little bit better post-trade, but I don't know. This is another example that it's just very – so I guess in conclusion, very interesting to see the variance. Actually, last kid I didn't have in my notes, but Shaedon Sharpe was the last one who for the 2022 draft was a high-level recruit, was joining Kentucky, didn't end up having – there was some eligibility concerns. He didn't end up joining the program, ended up going 7th overall in the draft, sort of based off of high school tape was all it was. He actually has had a pretty good career so far. Looks like maybe a little bit more successful of a pick than a couple of these guys. Well, specifically Bowl and Wiseman. But overall, right, you look at MPJ went from 2 to 14. Bowl Bowl went from 6 to 44. But then you also have like Shaedon Sharpe went from, he was like a top recruit, but 7th overall out of nothing, right? James Wiseman still goes number 2. Darius Garland goes from 15 to 5 after he tore his meniscus, right? It's interesting to see sort of the volatility and randomness. Again, some of this is just evaluations change, even without seeing that much new film, because you're scouting for college versus the NBA. That's the biggest thing to consider, really, when you're looking at NCAA recruiting rankings. They're recruiting rankings for the NCAA. They are not recruiting rankings for the NBA. Unfortunately, that would be nice, but that's not how they do things. So that's sort of what we're looking at, right? That's your population of the pre-Ignite kids, right? This is the gap that Adam Silver was trying to fill with the G League Ignite. So how do they do? Well, so let's just go year by year, right? So 2020-21 was the inaugural season. They went 8-7 that year. This was Jalen Green's year. Jalen Green was the number 2 overall recruit in 2020. He ended up being drafted number 2 overall that year in 2021 to the Rockets. So he, you know, is certainly no issues with his stock. Jonathan Kuminga was their other big time, again, potential top 5 pick. He did have a bit of a fall off. His shooting percentages were awful. He shot under 40% from the field that year, I believe. And after being a top 5 recruit who did reclassify from 21 to 20, he was like the number 1 overall guy in 21 until he reclassed up, I believe. And was a consensus top 5 recruit, ESPN, Rivals, 247. Ended up getting drafted number 7 overall in 2021, which doesn't seem that remarkable. But it was very clear that there was a top 5 that year that included Jonathan Kuminga and did not include two guys that got drafted above him, Scotty Barnes at number 4 and Josh Giddey at number 6. So Kuminga went from that group of 5 clear stars and fell a little bit out of it. I mean, he had a tough shooting year that year with the Ignite. The other two guys that year that the Ignite brought in, Isaiah Todd was the 17th overall recruit for RSCI, but was not somebody that was – I listened to Sam Vecini's podcast on the Ignite program and some of his thoughts on this, and it sounded like Isaiah Todd was not necessarily considered a big-time prospect, maybe like a fringe second-rounder. So he actually ended up going 31 overall to the Wizards. Literally played like 135 total minutes with them and has been in the G League the rest of his career. So I don't know that you can comment on him too much either way. But Daishon Nix is the other player that you'd want to look at. He was another consensus top 20 recruit, 16 on RSCI. He was someone getting mocked in the edge of the lottery, though, in the preseason. He was initially committed to go to UCLA before switching to the Ignite in the summer. And he's another guy. Nix is a bit different, right? He was supposed to be a first round pick for sure. His play was very underwhelming. I don't think you can. He only started two of the games. He shot under 40%. He shot 17.6% from three, which is not good. But it was not. A good showcase of his talents, clearly, and he went undrafted. He's played like 1,200 minutes in the NBA, but this year he's, you know, on a two-way contract with Minnesota. It's certainly not what he was hoping to see. But overall from this year, again, 8-7 record. They actually made the G League playoffs, lost the game to the Raptors 905. This was the first year of the G League Ignite, and frankly, I don't think this is disappointing whatsoever. I think Jalen Green had a good, solid year, was the number two overall pick over Evan Mobley, who easily could have taken that number two spot. Jonathan Kuminga did fall a little bit in pedigree, but number seven versus like a five or four pick, it's the same thing in terms of financial investment. Like, he got as much money as he needs, and the franchise investment, right? They're playing him now. He's having all the success he could have. Daishon Nix and Isaiah Todd, those two, again, can you really blame the Ignite, or was it more their performance? I tend to lean a little bit more the latter. So I actually tend to think that this season was not too bad by the Ignite in terms of their conversion rate, is maybe what you would want to call it. The next year, 2021-2022, was probably their most disappointing in terms of their top prospect. Jaden Hardy was the number two overall recruit per RSCI, again, number two in ESPN, number three in Rivals, number three in 247. This guy was a top five projected draft pick, too. Like a 6'3", 6'4", scoring point guard type. Very much a guy that makes sense as like a modern. Sort of what I think he was sort of pitched as what I kind of hope Stephon Castle will be coming into the year, right? Sort of like a big power guard that can score and can shoot and kind of defend and, you know, just a really good athlete that's also sort of got a good head on his shoulders. Hardy ends up dropping to the 30s in the draft. Is drafted by Dallas, but that is probably, again, I mentioned with Kuminga, a financial drop. That's a massive financial drop for Jaden Hardy. I mean, top five pick versus not even a first rounder is massive. Dyson Daniels was the guy that year who ended up having the best draft selection. He actually played over in Australia. I mentioned earlier he played with the NBA Australia Academy at first. I don't really know where he was expected to go, but he ended up going eighth overall in 2022. And then Marjon Beauchamp, maybe the greatest success story of the G League Ignite, was also this year, the 22 season. Marjon was around the 50th recruit. He was 46 per RSCI back in 2020. Unfortunately, during the COVID year, he, instead of going to college, was trying to do an alternative college pathway by joining a training program called Chameleon BX. It's run by this guy, Frank Mastriano or something. Apparently he's like a scammer who like just sort of got these kids to, I think that it was like a free thing, but it's sort of like free and also like I get to claim that I did all this with you or something. I mean, it's nothing like that's ever really free, right? And it's also taking all of their time. More or less sounds like you got them to sign up for this program, just sort of like work them out on the beach, like Navy SEAL style, and never took them to play basketball or like brought a basketball coach in or like knew what he was doing in terms of training to play in the NBA. So he just kind of worked them out really hard and then
they just kind of left because there's nothing basketball to do. Actually, funny enough, funny is not the right word. This is incredibly frustrating. But fortunately, I mean, Marjon was able to make a career for himself. Maxwell Lewis was one of the other kids that got caught up in that scam. So two of those kids have been able to make it into the NBA, which is certainly good to see. But Marjon, again, back to him, had that year with the Chameleon BX scam program. Ended up going back home to, I believe it was Yakima, Wisconsin, and joined the junior college roster there just for the COVID-shortened season. Ended up averaging like 30 points a game, just dominating the competition around there. His father was a professional basketball player, and I believe Rod Strickland was the one who eventually came and saw Marjon work out, and eventually the Ignite program didn't offer him the full 500,000 bonus that most of these Ignite participants were getting, or the prospects, right, that the Ignite was signing. He actually was just offered a $75,000 salary just to show you that he was not somebody that was brought in as a top prospect like Jalen Green or Jaden Hardy, right? He was brought in as a much more lower level guy, a fringe guy, a flyer. Ends up going 24th overall to the Bucks at the end of the year. And he's been in their rotation a little bit. I don't think I've really seen him recently. But he's a guy that's absolutely had success and probably the Ignite's greatest claim to have developed a player into a real NBA prospect. The other two dudes of note on that team, Michael Foster was the 13th overall recruit that year, but was never really considered a serious NBA draft pick. Went undrafted, is playing, I believe, with the Capital City Go-Go right now. And Scoot Henderson, actually, he committed to play 2 years with the Ignite, so this was his first of 2 years, obviously behind Jaden Hardy, so not as a starting point guard. This was also, I don't think I mentioned, they went 7-7 this year. This was the second COVID-affected season, so the second COVID-shortened season. This one overall, again, you have to ding them significantly for the Jaden Hardy fiasco, but Dyson Daniels made a great name for himself, got taken in the top 10. Marjon Beauchamp came out of nowhere to become a first-round pick. And obviously, Scoot Henderson went into the next year. But overall, again, I think this is an okay year. You just have to consider the Jaden Hardy and then the Marjon Beauchamp in two very different contexts, right? I mean, they had one great failure and one great success. And Dyson is a success as well. The next year, 2022-23, this was certainly the most disappointing year up to this year. They went 11-21 this year in their first full season. Scoot Henderson obviously was the big name. It was his second year with the program. He was shut down for the second half of the season due to injury. Pretty disappointing. In his place, London Johnson, who is another two-year guy, was able to fill in and start. However, the other couple of prospects that were draft eligible, Leonard Miller was a guy who very much a mystery box sort of curio in the 21-22 season, so for the 22 draft, ended up playing with the G League Ignite before the 2023 draft, ended up being very productive. He was probably the best prospect in terms of production on that team, certainly more efficient than Scoot. Certainly was better defending and rebounding and had more of a set role than City or Scoot had. Leonard Miller ended up going 33 overall to Minnesota, which I was pretty stunned by. I personally thought he was clearly a lottery pick. I'm kind of surprised he wasn't like the 9th or 10th pick. I still think he's probably that level of talent, to be honest, but that was really tough to see, especially after Leonard Miller had such a productive season, him drop into the second round. And City Sissoko, pretty similar. He was a professional player in France, grew up in France, was ranked as the third best European prospect coming into the year, right? Only behind, obviously, Victor Wembanyama and Ryan Rupert, who played over in the NBL with the Next Stars program. So Sissoko was another guy who was certainly projected as a first-round pick coming into the year. Ended up getting drafted number 44 overall to San Antonio, was on a two-way contract, despite having a good season statistically and, you know, on film. He's a 6'8", real, not explosive athlete, but power athlete for sure. I mean, you can't stay in his way. Two examples, Leonard Miller and City Sissoko, of guys performing in the G League for the G League Ignite program and not being rewarded financially or in terms of their draft selection. The last guy to mention on that team, Mojave King, just because he was drafted 47th overall by Indiana. He was actually born and raised in New Zealand, played in the NBL's Next Stars program for 2 years, and then played another year in the New Zealand League. He was drafted number 47 overall by Indiana. It was not signed even to a two-way contract, not signed to an NBA contract, but was signed to a G League contract with, I think it's the Fort Wayne Mad Ants. I mean, King was drafted in the second round, but didn't even end up getting a financial compensation based off of that. He's just got another G League deal. So certainly, I think when you look at the 22-23 year, it's hard to point out many successes. I mean, Scoot Henderson still ended up going number three overall, so did not take a major financial hit, but had the injury stuff, certainly took a reputation hit in terms of, I mean, Brandon Miller got drafted over him. People thought, I kind of thought Scoot Henderson was going to look like John Wall or Derrick Rose or something, right? That's what we were comparing him to, and he sure did not look like that. I mean, I still think he looked great, and he was still clearly the second best guy to me long-term. I still think you maybe have to look at Brandon Miller at this point just because he's proven to be able to score in the NBA, but I still probably lean Scoot. Just, I think this is all expected, what you've seen this year, right? Obviously, he was going to suck this year. But this year overall, I mean, the biggest indictments to me are Leonard Miller and Sidy Sissoko, because those guys had good, productive seasons, and that was not respected by the NBA. I mean, that's an indication that whatever it is, the NBA scouts do not respect the G League Ignite program and the production these guys have. There's a stench, there's a stigma coming from it, right? And you look at the 23-24 season this year, this team is 2-26. They have 2 wins and 26 losses. That is embarrassing. That is shameful. You know, one thing you have to point to with this team is just the number of prospects, right? Ron Holland, Matas Buzelis, both top five prospects this year. Aizan Almanza certainly was looking like a first rounder coming into the year. Tyler Smith, Thierry Darlan, both guys that were also clear fringe draft prospects. Tyler Smith turned himself into a clear first rounder. And then Dink Pate as well. Again, he might be a top five pick next year. They really loaded up this roster. And there's a couple of guys I haven't even mentioned. Isaiah Todd is on this roster for no reason, right? He's like theoretically a G League vet, I guess, but not really. There's Babacar Sané is still on this team, just sort of taking up minutes. Is he still a prospect? I guess, right? He's certainly not a vet, so he needs to be a prospect. And you look at this team. I mean, Ron Holland was, I think, the number one overall prospect, certainly a top three. I've seen him mocked like 13th overall. I've seen him mocked outside the top 10 in a lot of places. I still think he's a top five guy, clearly, but he's not getting that respect. Not all over the place. Matas Buzelis might go outside the top 10. Tyler Smith is the one you point to as a guy who's clearly taken his draft stock and built upon it, right? He's a guy who was a five-star recruit, maybe as like a 10th grader or something, like really early on, and sort of was lost a little bit in the mix in OTE. Was just sort of another one of those like, oh, cool, exciting OTE guys. Like, he's kind of skilled, but like, does this really mean anything? He's looked really good in the G League Ignite. I mean, he's a really skilled, tall shooter that's athletic. That's sort of what you're looking for as a base for your basketball players in the NBA. And if they can do that and be productive and stay on the floor in the G League, that's a good sign, I would say. Almanza, I think, is one that people are pretty disappointed by overall. He's probably a guy that just needs to take another year, go somewhere else, play professionally in France and get drafted 20th overall next year. I personally been a little disappointed by Darlan's development. I thought he had a chance to be a real contender for even a lottery pick this year, certainly a first-round pick. You know, he's a 6'8 guy that has played point guard in the past, is at least a ball handler. With the ability to shoot the ball. I did not say the ability to shoot and make the ball consistently, but he certainly will shoot the ball. He's a 6'8 guy that's a developing, burgeoning perimeter player with some real athleticism and some nascent ball skills and intelligence. I don't know. I think he's a guy that in certain situations, you know, maybe he's the next Santa Clara guard. I don't know. He's kind of that idea, right? Of like, kind of a self-creating shot guy that like, it's just not really going to work if you're the fifth most important prospect on your roster. again, this team went 2-26. Has gone 2-26. The season's not even quite over yet. It's terrible, right? So, anyways, that's the 20. That's this current season, right? So, you look at their team over time: 8-7, 6-6, then 11-21. Now they're 2-26. So when Adam Silver brings up this idea that the G League Ignite has been potentially a failure or that it's outlived its need, I guarantee you that 2-26 is a big reason why. I bet you if they were 15-13, throwing that out there, I don't think the comments would be what they are. I just think that, again, so, and let's cut into two buckets, right? The two main criticisms of the G League Ignite have been, number one, that they've caused elite talent to drop. Okay, that's certainly true with Jaden Hardy, right? We talked about that. He was a top five draft prospect, ended up dropping in the second round. That's not good. With Scoot, Jalen Green, Jonathan Kuminga, none of those guys were negatively impacted, again, at least financially. It's nothing like... So, again, this happens all over the place. It happens at Kentucky, it happens at Duke, it happens in Australia, it happens in France, it happens wherever, right? And where Yannick... Yannick Zoza, I believe, was like top five guy coming out of the year, ended up drafted in like the 50s, right? BJ Boston was like the number one recruit overall in some places. Certainly like a consensus top five guy, got drafted in the 50s by the Clippers. Even a guy like Cole Anthony, who was the top recruit back in the COVID year, got drafted 15th. Like, that's a massive financial drop compared to, oh, Scoot went from 2 to 3. Or even Kuminga, right? 4 to 7. Like, that's not... The scale is just much different. So, yeah, Jaden Hardy dropped, but they're not consistently, like, failing their top prospects. And the second complaint I think you would have at the Ignite is that they've never built any unheralded players in the top prospects, right? I think we clearly saw that with Marjan. That's not true. And it does look like Tyler Smith, again, this year is going to be a first-rounder, and was a guy that kind of a similar thing where had like a circuitous path to the Ignite. A couple of, I wouldn't call Tyler Smith's years lost years because he was playing in OTE, but sort of glossed over to an extent. Sort of, again, a lot of the OTE play is bucketed in this like, okay, well, it doesn't really mean anything. Frankly, when you look at Marjan and Tyler Smith out of whatever 15, 18 prospects, whatever it is, it's not a terrible hit rate. I mean, and again, we're talking about the number of low-level prospects that the Ignite has brought in and turned into high-level prospects, which, frankly, they just haven't brought many low-level prospects in to begin with. Even a guy like Isaiah Todd, they left him in the second round, right? I don't think he was guaranteed to do that anywhere else. So I don't think it's really fair to level either of those criticisms against them, at least not any more than a given NCAA program or more than the standard, right? That's sort of what we have to compare them to. However, I do think when you sort of compare a little bit to the NBL is where you might see some of the issues that we see with the Ignite, right? I think overall, when we look at the numbers, the track record for the Ignite is not that bad, right? I think it's relatively comparable to some of these NCAA programs, right? I think a Duke or a Kentucky is probably converting their prospects into draft picks at a similar rate, right? But the NBL has a couple of success stories that the Ignite cannot touch. LaMelo Ball was a four-star recruit. He had an awful, like, multiple lost years. He played, like, in Lithuania with LiAngelo for a year. He played in the Big Baller League. He played in, like, LeVar Ball's imaginary fantasy league. And then went to Illawarra for 1 year, turned himself into the number 3 overall pick. He did that by his play on the court, but he was playing on like a losing bad team, right? Like Scoot, like Ron Holland this year. But he was playing in a league that mattered, was playing against guys that were competitive, and in a context that scouts respected. So he got drafted number 3 overall. And clearly, I mean, he's had a lot of problems, he had a lot of injuries, not had a ton of winning, but he's clearly showed to be skilled enough and talented enough that... Yeah, he probably should have been 2. Probably should have gone over Wiseman, right? He probably should have gone 3. Probably should have been Ant. Probably should have been Halliburton. And then probably should have been LaMelo. Alex Saar? Dude, Alex Saar was not going to be a top 5 pick coming into this year. Alex Saar is considered the favorite for the number 1 overall pick this year. Dude, Alex Saar was like, maybe this guy will be a lottery pick. I think he was, again, he was a tall, athletic, skilled player coming out of the OTE league. Same team as Almanza, who, again, most people would have taken Almanza over Alex Saar coming into this year. And Almanza is rotting away on the Steel League Ignite team. Alex Saar is about to be the number one pick in the draft, more than likely. He's certainly going number one overall. Josh Giddey, I don't know where he was ranked, but he went number six overall, right? He certainly wasn't ranked like Kuminga was. He wasn't a top five prospect. I think he is another guy that made himself into a real prospect. So the NBL, I will say, they've never had a preseason top five prospect or whatever. Like I'm saying, again, all these guys, LaMelo Ball, Alex Saar, Josh Giddey, were not top tier talents coming into the season. So, I mean, the closest they have really is RJ Hampton, which he was like a top 10 recruit, consensus top 10 draft pick coming into the year, ended up falling to 23, I think, with Denver. And he has not turned into much of anything. I think he is either on a two-way or is on the Miami Heat roster, but again, has never had a significant role on a team that was worthwhile. Even the NBL misses sometimes, but overall, you kind of look at, especially, again, it's the big success stories. It's LaMelo Ball and Saar and Giddey. Marjon Beauchamp is awesome, but he was a 24th overall pick. It's not comparable. And even, again, looking at the couple of prep year kids or the guys that missed years, right? Darius Garland turned into the number five pick by tearing his meniscus. Like, Shaedon Sharpe skipped the year and turned into the number seven pick. Thon Maker skipped the year or just played high school for a year and jumped from the 30th recruit to the 10th pick, right? These things sort of happen sometimes. It sort of is what it is, right? I do think it's worth noting that the G League Ignite has not necessarily found their diamond in the rough yet, right? Dyson Daniels is certainly the closest you would get. But again, I think some of the commentary from Sam Vecenie, maybe others, maybe he was already considered a lottery pick coming into that year. So again, overall, the G League Ignite, have they failed their players? Is it a failed experiment? Do they need to shutter the doors and ban entry? Like, no, I don't think you need to roll the yellow caution tape out, right? Like, it's not a crime scene. They do need to reboot the program, though. There are some problems there. There is certainly a stigma. There's a disease of losing around there. You also have to, again, acknowledge that COVID did a number on this program. They happened to roll this out right before COVID hit. I mean, they sort of did that soft rollout in 18 with the select recruits program, offering the $125,000 to join just any G League team or a random G League team. And then in April of 2020 is when they announced the formation of the G League Ignite program. The first season was 2020-2021. It's the heart of COVID. I mean, that's just an impossible situation to place yourself in as a basketball program, right? But beyond that, I mean, it's just tough. I mean, you've got this year four of underperformance, losing, injuries now with Ron Holland having to sit out the rest of the season and Scoot the year before. It's sort of just, again, this like stigma around the program that I think is going to take time for even NBA scouts who are supposed to be the best at removing bias from their analysis, right? It's impossible. You can't help it. You can't help but think that the level of competition, not within the G League, but within that specific program, who can't get more than two wins, is probably not. It's not a competitive program. They're not a competitive team, right? They just aren't. What exactly is the problem here, right? Is it the G League? I don't think it's the G League. Without a doubt, the G League is a great place to develop NBA prospects. I mean, it's the closest thing there is to the NBA game that isn't the NBA. I would say that's pretty unquestionable. The problem is that the G League sucks and that nobody watches it because there are no fans and nobody's invested in it. That's my main complaint. There's no reason to watch. There's no reason to care about these games. Everyone is only incentivized by whatever their personal motivation is. There is no greater picture, which, again, in sports, it's always about how can I... It's a job, right? I need to make my salary. I need to make what's best for myself. But, you know, in every other context of team sports, you have championships and you have fans. You have external reasons to do this stuff. In the G League, it's just an audition. You're just auditioning for future roles. Either you're a veteran trying to audition for an NBA team or an overseas contract, or you're a prospect auditioning for the NBA draft, or you're a coach who, again, the coach is the only one, the coach and the front office are the ones incentivized to win. Players don't care about winning. They shouldn't. They have no incentive to care about winning. It doesn't matter to them. Especially in a program like this, you know, winning the third game versus the second game, really, you're telling me that matters? Nobody's watching these games. It's just the scouts anyways, and the scouts don't really care if your team won or not. The coach cares about wins because he wants to stay employed and he wants to get a better job. But those, you know, these incentives are not aligned. The coach has no reason to develop a prospect. That's not his job. His job is to win games in the G League. I mean, again, you say that's not true, but they went 2-20. They're going 2-26 this year. I don't think that coach is going to be there much longer. I don't think they're particularly happy. I think Jason Hart, right? I don't think they're very happy with the program this year, given Silver's comments for sure. So what can you do? The couple of changes I would love to see. The most obvious one, and again, when you look at the NBL Next Stars program, it's an obvious thing to compare it to. They spread around prospects on multiple teams, right? That's obviously what you need in the G League. The difference, again, is that in the NBL, each team has fans and matters and has a reason to play and will bench you as a prospect if you're not good, but will also play you if you are good. Obviously, that's difficult with the G League because we only have the Ignite and the Capitales. So theoretically, if you want to just add a bunch of non-affiliated teams, I guess you could do that. But theoretically, right, what you really need to see is prospects spread across multiple teams. You can't have a team with 8 prospects playing against a bunch of teams with no prospects, aka real basketball teams. The second thing, and following up with that real basketball teams note, you gotta sign good G League players to play for your G League team. Stop signing Norris Cole. Stop signing Amir Johnson. Stop signing Jarrett Jack. It doesn't make sense. Go sign guys that are really good in the G League right now. Stop signing 37-year-olds who used to play in the NBA for a few years. That's not what's going to help you win G League games. And I know that makes sense in terms of, oh, we're developing you for the NBA. Teach you what the NBA game is like. You know what's a lot like the NBA game? The G League game. Just learn how to win in the G League. Learn how to win as a professional. That's far more important than getting the nuances of like, oh, well, in the NBA, back when I played in there 15 years ago, here's what like Shaq used to do, right? Like, what are you talking about? Get out of here. Get good players on your team so you can win games. Again, everybody's just auditioning for their next team anyways. So why can't the G League just go get the best players to audition? You would think that this Ignite program would have plenty of money, right? I mean, maybe the salary cap is an issue at a certain point, but you should be able to go out and sign high-level G League players, make trades, do whatever you have to do. I don't care. Get a good team instead of just, like, prospects and guys that are like, yeah, we're old heads. We train and talk hoops and stuff. Like, bro, get good players to play on your basketball team. What are we doing here? And then the third thing, like, this is not an easy fix. This is literally, I mean, this is something that the G League is just not a real league right now, right? They have no fans. Nobody cares about it. It's not a competitive league. It has no, it doesn't matter to anybody except for the players playing in it and the coaches coaching in it and the executives executing in it, right? I know it's not easy. I know you can't just force a bunch of people to be fans of a program, but we have guys like Ron Holland and Scoot Henderson playing for this G League Ignite program that is out there in the ether. I paid $10 for ESPN Plus to try to find G League Ignite games. They have like 4 games. I cannot find a game of Ron Holland playing basketball this year. That's insane. Do you know how insane that is? I get that the basketball peak prime is, you know, it's more like 25 to 29 or whatever, but like in the grand scheme of things, your basketball peak is like 20 to 35, right? It's 20 to 40. That's when you're playing competitive basketball. And we're just taking a random year of these guys' careers and saying, cool, let's not watch that. You know, Scoot Anderson, let's just not watch him play good basketball for a year. That's insane. That's insane to me. That makes no sense. Let's just enjoy these young prospects while they play basketball. That's why people, that's, you know why I fell in love with the NBA draft? Is because I watched college basketball and I saw freaking Devin Booker or whatever. And you see dudes in college, you see them go on to the NBA, you see the great things that happen. You see Tyrese Haliburton, right, go from the 12th pick to whatever he's become. It's so cool. But a big part of that is because you get to see guys like Zion, RJ, Cam Reddish lose in the NCAA tournament, right? It's competitive. It matters. It is fun. I have good memories of watching these guys in college. The NBL is the same way, right? I think that's a huge incentive. The guys, even Brandon Jennings going to play in Italy, the games mattered. There were fans. There were people that were going to be happy if you won and sad if you lost. That's the whole point of this. It's insane that we have these guys playing on this meaningless, worthless, unwatchable program. Not even unwatchable in terms of it's bad basketball. Literally not a product that people can or desire to watch. I think that's a huge problem. And at the end of the day, even the Overtime Elite program is worth watching. Even that I feel excited to watch occasionally. And those are kids. This is the biggest problem that the G League Ignite program has, is that it exists in a league that doesn't actually matter. And until you fix that, I think it's going to be very difficult for the G League Ignite to ever really compete with the program like the Next Stars. And obviously, again, the college ranks are different because it's each school competing against the other schools, whereas in Australia, Adelaide is not competing with Perth to sign Alex Saar necessarily, I don't think. I think it is more of an allocation system. I don't know if that's true, but it's certainly much different than in college, where if Alex Saar had signed in college, he might be the best player on his team, right? In general, if you sign a top prospect, you're expecting the best player on your team. So anyways, I think that's enough rambling for me. G League Ignite, is it a failure? No, it's not a failure. But has it been a rousing success? Absolutely not. Does it need changes? Yes, absolutely it does. Again, the phrase I used was a reboot. I think that's what you need, right? I know that my suggestions, again, you can't really just fix the G League. Spreading out onto multiple teams, I know there are difficulties with that in terms of, obviously, these are all affiliated teams. The Ignite is not, etc. The most obvious thing to me is, like, just have fewer prospects on the team and sign good G League players. Like, I really don't think I would be having this conversation if they were 500 record. So just play better basketball. Stop wasting these kids' careers. That's my takeaway. I would like to watch Ron Holland and Matas play actual basketball that's fun this year. And I get that college basketball can be ugly and it can be grating, but I'll be danged if it's not fun. So anyways, appreciate y'all tuning in. This is a lot of fun. I will try to be back out with some new stuff soon. Hope y'all enjoy. Hope y'all learned something. Hope to talk to y'all. Bye.